listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. How is serving serving others beneficial to young people, really to people of all ages? What opportunities are there in our own church body, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, to organized efforts to serve others and to learn about serving others? Well, we have Lutheran Church Missouri Synod servant events, LCMS servant events that take place every year. And we have some time to talk about those today with our friends from the LCMS Office of National Mission and a DCE from the St. Louis area, Emmanuel Lutheran Church in St. Charles, Missouri. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. Find out more about them on our website, KFUO.org. Look for Concordia University, Wisconsin in the sponsor section. Joining me in studio today, Jim Lohman from the LCMS Office of National Mission. Good morning, Jim.
Hi, Andy.
Always great to have you in studio and learning about all a variety of things going on in the LCMS Office of National Mission, youth ministry, and particularly servant events, which is your big area of responsibility.
Yes, that's true. It's the season is beginning. We have 70 opportunities plus for the summer, and some of them are already full with young people and their adult leaders who will be headed there, and others are still looking for groups to come and serve with them this summer.
I can't wait to get into more about what servant events are, what ones are coming up this year as well. And today we have the privilege of talking with one of our colleagues, three DCEs in the room today. You can feel the shift in the cosmos.
Much better than that.
It's like a magnetic force. Jolene Seaberth, she's DCE at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in St. Charles. A classmate of mine, too.
Yeah.
We go way back to Concordia University. It was River Forest at the time. Concordia University, Chicago now.
Three River Forest DCEs in the room
right.
at the same time.
That's right. Now, was it Concordia?
It was Concordia River Forest.
Concordia University or college when you were there?
Concordia University.
Just Concordia University.
Squeaked in as a university.
Well, you didn't go to Concordia Addison. See, I have a Concordia University Chicago hoodie and a Concordia University River Forest hoodie. I think I need one that says Concordia Addison on it. Then that would cover all the ages,
that
right?
That would cover it all, I believe.
I don't know if they had hoodies back then when it was in Addison. It started off as Concordia Teachers Seminary, I think.
Yeah.
Goes way back.
Teachers College, I believe.
And mm-hmm. Always training educators, Lutheran educators, is a long mm-hmm. history of the fine institution that we all attended to prepare to serve in the various vocations we serve in. Tell me a little about what you do at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in St. Charles, Jolene.
Sure, absolutely. I'm the DCE there, working with youth ministry, primarily with grades 6 to 12. I also help with our family ministry as I'm able to. So with youth ministry, I work with confirmation, service, a lot of teaching, enjoy having a lot of fun with the youth and mentoring them and being a part of their lives.
Having a lot of fun with the youth. Now, what does that mean? Having a lot of fun and mentoring as well, you said.
Sure.
What does that look like?
Yeah. So we meet different Wednesdays during the month with our middle schoolers. We have an event that happens after school. Get together. Sometimes we'll have up to 50 middle schoolers that come. And we use that time to build community and also to talk about our faith. High school, we get together on other Wednesdays, and we have a time called Dine and Discuss, where we meet at restaurants and just answer any kind of question that comes up. So having those conversation points are an awesome thing as well.
What are some of the, that's intriguing to me. What are some of the common questions, or what are some of the questions that have come up in the Dine and Discuss that have caught your attention?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ones depending on what's going on in the world. So we talked about the election. We talked about things that happened in school when a classmate passed away. We've talked about other stuff relating to creation, evolution, things that they hear in the public school. There's no conversation we won't have if it's important enough to them to bring it up.
So you just hang out at a restaurant and have a nice conversation?
Yeah, it's usually supposed to be for an hour and a half, but most times we're there for about 3.5 hours. So
I could see
it's a great time. Yep.
That's why a meal is important. You
yes.
talk too long, your blood sugar starts getting too low and can't even get up and move on. Well, that's intriguing to me. So as you have conversations like that, you're getting to know them mm-hmm. more as well, and they're getting to know one another. Where does... where does serving others fit? Is it a part of education and Christian nurture and formation in your work at your church at Emmanuel?
Absolutely. We focus on service as a way to not just get out of our comfort zone, but in serving together, you build those relationships, you see the needs of people. In confirmation, we have 4 service-related components that we do every year, and parents are supposed to attend with their students. So then we get families cultivating an attitude of service as well. And then each summer we have a high school event that we go on, which is about a week to a week and a half long. And then we, again, are getting out of our comfort zone and heading somewhere that we're not familiar with and serving others.
Why do you choose heading somewhere that you're not familiar with? What does that bring to this serving opportunity?
So when we go somewhere that it's a different environment, we're out of our zone, people are more vulnerable to helping other people in the sense that they're not as absorbed in, oh my goodness, there's this going on over here in this part of town, and maybe I'll come and participate in part of it, but then I have a practice I need to go to. And so being all in is very important.
So rather than being distracted by some of the regular daily things, they have kind of this immersion experience, mm-hmm. where they're really committed to it. When you pack up and go somewhere else, you know, across the country or across the state, wherever it might be, this immersion experience really keeps you committed to it for the time.
Absolutely. In our servant event that we're going on this summer, Idaho Servant Adventures in Shoshone, we told the kids a couple weeks ago that there's no phone service at all while we're there. So
how did that go over? Was there this huge gasp?
Will there be a dine and discuss?
Right. Right. There might have to be. One of the first thoughts was, oh my goodness, what's going to happen to my Snapchat streaks and that kind of thing. So there was that. But there are a number of them who are looking forward to being disconnected and unplugged for the week, which is great. And it'll be the same for adults. That'll be a challenge to not have any sort of connection for that week.
How are you feeling about that?
Well, I've gone before. It's really okay because I enjoy not having that distraction. Mm-hmm. Be a part of that, because I think for any of us, even if we're not working or we're off, the temptation to check our phones for things is pretty strong. So,
what have you seen as some of the outcomes, some of the benefits of participating in servant events like this?
Mm-hmm. When we've gone on servant events over the years, and one of the big benefits is that kids come back and they have a high level of interest and excitement looking for other ways to serve. They're great witnesses of what they've done and bring those stories back and share them with people in the congregation, in their friends who might not go to a church, but like, why did you spend a week of your summer vacation going and doing these things? And so sharing that as well and be witnesses of the fact that, you know, it's important to help out our neighbor, whether our neighbor is in the St. Louis, St. Charles community, or if our neighbor is in Idaho or South Korea, Mexico, Michigan, wherever that might be.
So by going on a servant event in this committed time, this almost immersion experience, because you're going to another community, another place, and really spending some dedicated time learning and serving others, what I'm hearing you say is that then sparks this interest in serving and finding ways to serve back at home that might not have been there before. So getting up, going away somewhere else, and then and serving there sparks this interest. They come back home and then seek out other opportunities to serve right in their own context, their everyday context where they are at home.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. For many of them, it then becomes part of a lifestyle. They love the week-long out of town because it's an adventure in
sure.
itself, but having their eyes open to those other opportunities where, oh, there's a neighbor who needs help with this. Well, I know I can do that. I've done that before, and I have confidence in that. And then also extending that and inviting friends to also participate is something that mm-hmm. they learn from that.
Mm-hmm.
And the opportunity to discover skills that mm-hmm. they never knew they had, because many of those events, I know Idaho Servant mm-hmm. Adventures, it includes building and grounds work mm-hmm. and all sorts of things that perhaps you haven't had an opportunity to learn that skill, and you come back with great new tools that you can use to serve in your community.
Well, you bring up a good point. Servant events, the LCMS servant events, provide a variety of ways to serve. Some of them focus on, as you pointed out, construction or building. Some focus on other ways of serving as well. What are the different types of servant events?
They run the gamut. We've touched on construction and just those components, human care, working with differently abled people, working in a community, perhaps leading Vacation Bible School, working in diverse settings, perhaps where you have not been a part of before. There's some that are working with Native Americans. So it runs the gamut mm-hmm. of opportunities, and many of them aren't just focusing on one component. You might be there for 5 to 7 days and experience human care, construction, and a number of other outreach opportunities that you can be a part of.
So, Jolene, you mentioned construction being one of, you know, a part of one of the projects you've done. Are there mm-hmm. other types of servant events that you've been involved with and taken groups on?
Yeah, so we've had some where we've done Vacation Bible School. We went on a servant event that had a disabled day camp. So youth were partnered up one-on-one with one of the campers for that. We've had some where we went out door-to-door and we were underlining verses in Bibles, and then we handed out Bibles to people. So there's all sorts of different ways that kids can serve that. And for example, when we go to Idaho, I know that in the past years, they'll do some days of heavy duty construction, and some days they might be chopping firewood. Some days they might be visiting with people. So it runs the gamut. And the neat thing is that for kids who they might be more uncomfortable in one area, that there's an opportunity for them to find a comfort level while we're there.
So you mentioned, you know, some of the construction things or some of the activities they might be doing in this camp, chopping firewood. How many of the kids, this is the first time that they've done something like that?
I would say probably most of them. They haven't done that before.
How about you? Is this your first time chopping firewood?
Well, I did it last time I was there, but I found myself to be more of an expert stacker of firewood and left the chopping to those who enjoyed that
part. And that's an important skill as well.
Yep.
Stacking the firewood appropriately for...
I'm sure she did it like in a creative, artistic sort of way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Just spelling out things as she... a nice design. So as you pointed out, discovering some skills too or developing some skills that they might use in other settings as well, right, in their mm-hmm. own community. Now that they know how, you know, just using the chopping firewood as an mm-hmm. example, how they might be able to serve a neighbor with something that we might take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something as simple, well, I shouldn't say simple because it takes a lot of effort to chop wood, but something that perhaps may seem mundane, mm-hmm. They could do right here in their own community, helping mm-hmm. an elderly neighbor that needs some help chopping wood or the construction aspect mm-hmm. as well.
Absolutely. And part of the reason we had firewood as a big part of our last servant event to Idaho was that was the fuel for the winter. So we chopped enough wood for the house we were working with to fill their whole garage and their whole basement. So for the kids to see what an impact that made on the person who was living there was pretty amazing.
Wow. Now, you also mentioned one of the other settings you were doing a camp for individuals with developmental and intellectual disabilities, and the kids were paired one-on-one with the campers, I assume adults.
Mm-hmm,
they were
yes.
paired with adults with disabilities. For the students who were paired with them, tell me about what that experience was like for them. Was this for some of them, was this a first-time experience interacting that closely with someone with a developmental or intellectual disability?
For most of them, it was. And they received some training just on what to do and how to help. For some of them, they really gravitated towards that. For others, it was way outside their comfort zone. But there were other staff there that could step in as needed. So it wasn't a situation where, like, okay, I can't do this because I'm too nervous about it. So The other nice thing was people were there to help them, mm-hmm. help them through and help them be successful with that.
What were some of the things that the responsive students after they had the opportunity to serve and care for someone with a disability or that was differently abled than them?
It really opened their eyes to the idea that they could do it and that it gave them more thoughts for opportunities and how they could help other people. And some people, as we know, really like working with people, and others are more in that physical labor situation. So for those who that was way outside of their comfort zone, it helped them know that they could do it, even though it wasn't their first choice of things to do.
Not my favorite thing to do, but I can do it, and mm-hmm. and I can be helpful.
Yes.
Spend some more time finding what it is that is my favorite way to serve mm-hmm. others. What about how parents, I'm sure that there are probably some parents that help out either in preparations for servant events or even go along on servant events. What do students share with their parents, and what do parents share with you in terms of feedback regarding servant events that their kids have been on?
Mm-hmm. We always do have parents attend because we need them to be a part of this and working hand in hand. We do tell students when we get back that they need to share with their parents. When their parents ask them how it was, they can't just say it was fine, it was good. We need to use some more descriptive language with that. But most can see a change in the sense of the level of excitement and the passion and commitment. And a big part of servant events as well, besides the joy from serving other people, is that you spend time in Bible study every day. You spend time in worship. You spend time in that community. So you're learning other things as well. So you learn how to get along with people you might have had trouble getting along with, or you learn more things about your faith walk and other components. So really encouraging the kids to be verbal and share those experiences is a big part of that. And then we always have the parents and congregation come together and hear about the journey when we return.
I'm sure when you're traveling together like that too, you're learning a lot about each other.
Absolutely.
Traveling, yes. And living in close quarters probably, yeah. for a week or more. When you're, you know, sleeping on a gym floor or staying in cabins or wherever you might mm-hmm. be staying. What are some of the places that has been your lodging on servant events?
Yeah, so it's run the gamut. We've been at camps that have, you know, your own bathroom, shower. We've stayed at churches where everyone sleeps on a gym floor and there's no showers, so you use the hose behind the church to clean up. it's been pretty far and wide, so... Yeah.
A valuable learning experience,
yes,
nonetheless.
Absolutely.
Different ways of personal hygiene.
Right.
it certainly makes you appreciate what you have,
yes,
in your,
sure.
In your own regular setting as well. How have servant events helped those whom you've served? What are some ways that those you've gone to serve, or maybe even some surprises that people you got to help that you didn't realize you were helping?
Yeah. So over the years, we've done quite a variety of things. One servant event in Maryland was building ramps for people to get out of their homes with their wheelchairs. So just seeing the joy in their faces when we were done and they could come outside, that was pretty amazing. We've had the ones that are like with the VBSs, those little kids are just so excited to be a part of that, and they really latch on and love those older kids. So seeing those relationships are also an awesome thing. We've done roofing projects. We've built driveways and put in carpet. And whenever we get the opportunity to actually meet the people we're serving, it's a huge joy because they're so thankful. And it helps the kids to see that they really did make a difference, even if they're doing something that seems a little monotonous. Mm-hmm. Or
I was chipping paint,
right?
For 4 days. Yes.
Yep.
I've done that with the group. And the next year we happened to be in the same place, and the young people wanted to go back and see the house painted. I mean, they enjoyed scraping the paint, but mm-hmm. they wanted to see the finished product. So
sure. Sometimes you get to see the fruit of your labor. Sometimes you don't
sometimes
get to see the finished product. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
What would you say you know, in terms of students who have participated when they go the first time, is there an eye-opening experience for those students that first time? And then what draws them back? Are there mm-hmm. students who go back?
Sure. There's some who definitely are apprehensive when it's their first time because they don't know what to expect. They don't know how they feel about leaving everything behind and leaving friends behind for a week to a week and a half. They get nervous if some of their close friends aren't attending and should they really go if everybody else is doing something different. But by the time we return from the event, it definitely has made a change in their attitude. They look forward to the next time and they look forward to those relationships that they built on the event that they would not have known certain people if they would not have spent a week and a half with them. So coming back with that that fire to serve, that fire for Jesus and those relationships is definitely something that is exciting mm-hmm. to see and witness.
Well, Jolene's group, Emmanuel, is going to Idaho
yes.
again this year. But there are a number of places to serve on LCMS Servant Events. Where can we serve this year? Where can we find out what opportunities are available?
The easiest way is to go online to our listing, which is at www.lcms.org/servant events. And you can pick a state. You can look at dates that you have that might be available. You can pick a time period. Mm-hmm. You can even just have them pull up all the ones that are still open. So there's a number of options for sorting those events and then determining what would work best for your time frame and the people that you have available to travel with you.
So at lcms.org/servant events, you can find this handy little tool that lets you search through all the
Correct.
The listings
They're
of servant events.
Yes.
And you can search based on different criteria, the type of event, uh-huh. who or the
age that you might be bringing, mm-hmm. the date, the month.
So or region?
Yes, region too.
What are some examples of places where servant events are taking place
well,
this year? Idaho, obviously.
Yes, Idaho. Jolene has been to one that we host in Richmond, Virginia, mm-hmm. Rich's in Richmond. Mm-hmm. They do a variety of construction, and then they also plan an event for young people in the community who are differently abled, and that's part of it as well, so mm-hmm. it kind of runs the gamut. A number in Michigan that are happening. Camp Concordia is hosting a number of other camps. Lutheran Valley Retreat. I should stop so I'm not hurting anyone's feelings as I forget who might be hosting here. Near St. Louis, Camp Trinity is hosting one out in New Haven. So I wish I could rattle all 70 plus of them for you, but those are some highlights.
Sure.
From East Coast to West Coast.
That's what I'm looking for is where, yeah, they're all over the country. You mentioned several camps. A lot of camps host servant events.
Correct.
But there are also local congregations that will host a servant event in their mm-hmm. city, right in their own neighborhood or, you know, a close and nearby neighborhood and provide opportunities to serve right there as well.
Correct.
So all over the place.
Right. Churches host recognized service organizations, camps, other entities.
What advice, Jolene, do you have for someone who might be taking a group for the first time, who's thinking, okay, maybe we should do a servant event. There are some opportunities open this summer. We might just take a few youth who are interested and go. What's your advice for that first time? Obviously, we know we need to be planning in advance, and we still
right.
got a little bit of time to plan.
Sure. I would say one part would be to figure out logistically what time of year, what type of distance you're willing to go on. If it's a first time, staying closer would take out some of those planning factors. We are flying to Idaho this year. The group has traditionally taken a bus, which has taken 2 to 3 days to get there, but we mix that up a little bit for this year. But overall planning, just working on the budget, how much it costs to go, how much it'll cost for transportation and those pieces, and then making sure that the kids are mentally ready, spiritually ready, as they look at going, and yeah, just getting the group together. And there's lots of hints and there's lots of resources available for groups who want to go on servant events. There's planning guides, there's devotion guides, there's all sorts of help. So the other big part would be, don't be afraid to ask others who have gone before for assistance with that.
So make use of those resources that are available.
Yes, absolutely.
LCMS.org/servant events and find out what's going on this year, what events are still open, and maybe take just a few people this year, go and see, or take a large group, go and experience it for the first time, and bring back some great lessons and find value in those opportunities to serve. Well, thank you both for being my guests today. We're all out of time already. Jolene Seaborth, DCE at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in St. Charles, Missouri. Thanks for sharing your LCMS Servant Event stories with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And Jim Lohman, LCMS Office of National Mission. Thanks so much for all you do to keep all these coordinators, all these people who are working on Servant Events coordinated and together. I know you have a whole crew, a whole planning team that makes that happen. So thanks to you and that team for doing that.
Thank you, Andy.
LCMS.org/servant events, the place to find out more information and more Faith and Family on the way on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
What comes to mind when you think of the country of Iceland? Frigid natural beauty? According to local promoters, it's an amazing country filled with beautiful nature, wonderful food, and inspiring art and culture. But Iceland lacks one very inspiring thing, people with Down syndrome. According to one expert, every single baby, 100% of all those diagnosed with Down syndrome, are aborted. And they actually brag about it. Let that sink in. A landscape totally void of those sweet, smiling faces with dancing almond-shaped eyes. Absent are the arms that literally wrap you in unconditional love, spreading joy wherever they go. Now, what comes to mind when you think of Iceland? Perhaps a nation lacking human warmth and desperately needing our prayers.
Like us on Facebook at Life Issues and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
This is Pastor John Vieker, Senior Assistant to President Harrison here in St. Louis. Agnus Dei Liturgical Arts continues the fine tradition of proclaiming the gospel through Christian art, through the production of altarpieces, paintings, and drawings. Agnus Dei Liturgical Arts portrays the gospel in all its splendor. Their website is agnusdeiarts.com. That's agnusdeiarts.com.
This is Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark.
And Pastor Jolly John Lukumsky.
Inviting you to listen to Wrestling with the Basics.
30 minutes of laughter and the Word of God.
Saturday mornings at 9:05 on KFUO AM 850.
Or on demand at KFUO.org.
Whoa. We put the fun in the fundamentals.
Saturday mornings at 9 on KFUO, the messenger of good news. KFUO, the messenger of good news. And Jesus said, "Truly, truly, I say to you, unless one is born of the water and the Spirit, he cannot enter the kingdom of God. That which is born of the flesh is flesh, and that which is born of the Spirit is spirit." KFUO, the message is clear.
Listening to Faith and Family, I'm Sarah Golseth. Many times when we have the joy of talking with missionaries, they're in the U.S. on home service and shortly on their way back to the mission field. But today, we get to talk with a missionary who has fulfilled her term of service and is now transitioning back to life in the States with New Vocations. In studio with me today is Deaconess Rachel Jasif. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you, Sarah. It's good to be here.
Very glad to have you with us. So you're a fellow Concordia University Chicago graduate. Tell me a bit about why you chose Concordia and the Deaconess program and what led you in that direction.
Well, I grew up in the Lutheran church, but yet had no idea what a deaconess was, never had heard of it. I had been thinking about maybe serving in the church, possibly missionary service, but because I didn't know what a deaconess was, I really didn't know what shape that would take. And so when my mom found some information about the deaconess program, I looked more into it. I'd already been thinking about maybe some other Concordias with their other church work programs and maybe social work counseling, but deaconess ministry sounded like the right fit for me, at least on paper. So I looked into it, very much felt that the Lord was guiding that, making it clear, just jump in, Rachel, and see where this takes you. And so after getting to Concordia, I, of course, continued learning more about what that looked like, the diverse ways that deaconesses can serve, and that flexibility of ministry is what really drew me to it. And so I kept on and kept on learning, and the more deaconesses I met, well, number one, I thought, why haven't I met you before? I wish I'd known this, you know, a long time ago. But I'm just thankful that I ended up at Concordia in the deaconess program and meeting all of the awesome peers that I did there, as you yourself know.
Yeah.
So in and outside the deaconess program, it was a very formative time, as I know it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just thankful to have ended up at Concordia, to have found deaconess ministry when I did, and to continue learning all the different ways that deaconesses can serve the church.
Sure. And was mission or service in the church something you had always wanted to do?
Yeah, I mean, I remember from the time I was pretty young, thinking it'd be pretty cool to have a job where I pretty much just got to talk to people about Jesus. But the older I got, I realized, okay, this needs to take shape somehow so that I can also make a living and support, you know, living a life. So, sorry, I forgot initially what you...
Mission work was something that was always right. Something that you wanted to do from the time you were a little kid. And as part of the deaconess program, you have an internship.
Right.
Was an international internship something that you had kind of hoped for?
Yeah, thank you. Getting me back on track. So I had become interested in different cultures. I started studying Spanish in high school, so had an eye on Latin America. And then, of course, going into the deaconess program and finding out there are deaconesses that work in all sorts of different ministries, foreign mission work being one of those. Mm-hmm. And, of course, within that, it's diverse in itself. So I think God just continued to open doors in that way and leading me down that path. And I kept meeting different people who encouraged me toward that. And God used that, all those different relationships, to open those doors as well. And here I sit. And as I reflect on, I guess in my case, the past 5 years of serving as a missionary with the LCMS, it feels kind of like a whirlwind. So much life in really a short amount of time. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've lived in the experiences the Lord has given me. And I know that, of course, mission work is everywhere. I've just been given a chance to serve in a place very different from where I grew up.
Yeah, yeah. So your internship was in Lima, Peru, mm-hmm. and that was for 2 years about?
It was just about 2 years, yep.
So what kind of work were you doing in Lima?
So when I was in Lima, at the time, it was a very, very new church plant, and we were trying to establish what we were calling a mercy house. Now it has certainly grown since that time, but when I was in Lima, it was just a dream on paper, kind of, you know, with a strategic plan and all these ideas and kids we wanted to reach out to. And so I spent the first big chunk of my internship just trying to find a location mm-hmm. with fellow missionaries for this center in order to really be an established entity in a new community that didn't even really have the attention of the government mm-hmm. for aid in different needs that they had. And so we wanted to very much establish that we weren't just a flash in the pan. We weren't just coming in to toss some aid that wouldn't actually be connected to anything long lasting.
Sure.
And so God has certainly blessed that ministry. And I just got to be a part of laying some of the first bricks, and that's been, you know, built upon in the past years. And now there's a church plant along with it, mm-hmm. and they've even expanded to different communities in Lima, which is really exciting to see. And I frankly feel really humbled and privileged to have gotten to be a small part of something that's really bigger than all of us. And so it's exciting to see how God has carried that on.
Yeah. What was the reception like when you first arrived, the reception from the people that were already there?
Well, there had been a mission team there for a couple of years, and I went with a colleague of mine, a fellow geo-missionary, Julia Mueller, mm-hmm. Who was there for serving for a year. And so she and I arrived at the same time, and we had a very warm reception. The missionary team had prepared all sorts of things, including finding us a place to live, which
kind
is
kind of important.
Absolutely. We were very grateful for that. But, you know, the Peruvian people, too, are very, very open to learning and wanting to know about other places in the world. And so I found dialoguing with people about faith fairly easy, even with people I didn't know, mm-hmm. like taxi drivers. And some of it may be because I physically stick out. I don't look the way that other folks do there. I physically stuck out, which I ended up almost forgetting after I got used to my bearings around Lima. But the Lord opened doors through that as well. And people who wondered, you know, why are you here? Well, let me tell you. And yeah. How much time do you have? Because that's how I kind of was able to, I guess, change the tone of what I was saying. How much information do they really want? Or, you know, is it a quick conversation, a quick passing by? So
sure. Now, with these mercy houses that you were able to establish, what kinds of changes or the impact did you see of those houses on the kids and the families that you were dealing with?
Well, because I got to be a part of the initial stages, a lot of what I've seen, the impact has been secondhand from mm-hmm. colleagues who are there serving still, like Deaconess Caitlin Warden and mm-hmm. others. And so I've seen and heard more after the fact. But from what I can tell, I mean, we were establishing this in a place that didn't have, wasn't a church presence. Mm-hmm. A lot of the kids were latchkey kids and are, you mm-hmm. know, even to the present day, who mm-hmm. who can sometimes find themselves really vulnerable to all sorts of things like theft and drugs and gangs and violence. I mean, kind of you name it. Where the first Mercy House that I was involved with was established in a community called La Victoria mm-hmm. in Lima. It's close to just a few blocks away from the largest wholesale market in at least Peru, wow. maybe a portion of South America. I would have to look that up. But the point is, it's just this vast, expansive market that you can basically find literally anything you could ever yeah. kind of conceive of. You can probably find it in this market, which means then that there's just a huge influx of people. So mm-hmm. great opportunity to be brushing elbows with new people who have contacts all over the country, really. Mm-hmm. And in particular, children are vulnerable in this area because of all that movement and demand for work. And so some of the kids end up working on the streets. And mm-hmm. so the initial dream of the Mercy House model was to be an outreach to street kids, mm-hmm. specifically kids working and maybe even living in the streets. At least at the time I was in Peru, the Lord kind of brought a different demographic to us. And so I don't recall any of the children I personally knew working on the street. However, there's a whole new batch mm-hmm. of kids since then. And mm-hmm. and so the Lord brought us different kids at the time. But it has continued developing. And like I mentioned, they've now been able to expand into another region of Lima mm-hmm. that also has, I think it's the largest district of the city, which simply put means that there's a ton of influx and traffic of people. And so once again, having a stronghold in those types of communities opens tons of doors mm-hmm. to impact people with the gospel, and then who knows where they're going to end up with that.
Sure. Now, you said the place in the where the first Mercy House was like it was a forgotten group of people, and the was it the park that the house was in? The government even know that park existed?
Well, they certainly do now. At the time when we were kind of narrowing down which community we wanted to be in, mm-hmm. and weren't really coming up with anything in terms of a location to rent that was appropriate for our needs, we came to understand that, I don't know if it was on a map or basically in the eyes of the municipality, which is what they call it, the localized government there, they didn't really know where the park was or what name it was under.
Wow.
So our presence being there has really brought a lot of attention, much needed attention, to that community. And it was interesting to see them, even the government, fixing up the park little by little the longer mm-hmm. we were there, because attention was growing. And so now, like I mentioned before, there's a church plant, and Pastor yeah. Josh Gale is pastor there, and Pastor Eddie Hosh and Herb Birch, and mm-hmm. like I mentioned, Caitlin, and you know, there are other missionaries serving there now as well. So it's just been exciting to see how the Lord has used our presence, a bunch of foreigners who didn't really know anyone in that community, to bring positive change. And of course, the overarching hope is that through that ministry, kids and their families would come to know the gospel. And sure. that is happening.
And that's incredibly important.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
after your time in Peru, graduation, your first call as an actual deaconess from Concordia, and where was that call?
I served my first call in the Dominican Republic. Mm-hmm. So I lived in Santiago, which is the second largest city in the country. Mm-hmm. And so that transition from being a geo missionary in Peru and getting to carry over those experiences really well prepared me, I think, for service in the Dominican. Very different cultures, mm-hmm. different cuisines, different social norms, but yet the same need for the gospel, certainly, and the same language, although people speak the language very differently between those two places, which is often very fun.
What were some of the things that you learned in Peru that you were able to establish maybe right away as a new career missionary in the Dominican Republic?
Well, I guess first and foremost, being able to hone my Spanish skills in Peru and have friends that corrected me when I needed it greatly helped me in my ability to communicate right off the bat with people, which sure. then meant I was able to jump pretty quickly into teaching classes mm-hmm. to the deaconess students who were there. So the language, certainly, as well as the concept of time. I didn't get to the field feeling flustered when things wouldn't pan out the way I had scheduled them. Mm-hmm. There were exceptions to that, as with any learning process, I think. But so the concept of time and some of the social norms were pretty similar. How to greet people, mm-hmm. common things that make living life, I guess, more normal as mm-hmm. someone's adjusting to a new place of service.
Sure, sure. So you mentioned teaching classes. Was that your primary work as a deaconess?
Yes. So in the Dominican Republic, I was primarily teaching deaconess classes in three different church plants
oh, wow.
around Santiago. So during the week, I would generally teach one class in each church plant a week. Sometimes, of course, that would change because there are a variety of number of students in each place. Life happens. Mm-hmm. The ladies all have families of some size and nature that they're taking care of. So sometimes things had to change. But I was primarily teaching theology classes and working alongside fellow missionaries on the field, especially my fellow deaconesses, to try to establish and formalize a bit more the deaconess training curriculum and kind of field work experiences. So mm-hmm. it's still in process, but there's been a lot of forward motion in that, and certainly a lot of work that had been laid down long before my time by mm-hmm. vicars and previous deaconesses to try to start building interest in that and get the ladies studying God's word. So sure. I got to be a a small piece of that.
And how important is growing the number of deaconesses in the Dominican Republic?
Well, in the Dominican as well as other Latin churches, that's a main focus. One of the several main focuses of the region, because as we're training pastors and planting congregations, we want the women in the church to also be well versed in theology and God's word, and being able to put that into practice to support the ministry that's already going on. So in the case of the Dominican specifically, these ladies that I taught were already serving in a lot of capacities. Mm-hmm. And so this was simply giving them the theology behind, why do we serve as Christians? Why do we want to go and visit the church member who hasn't shown up for a while? Why do we want to go and visit the family who doesn't have a lot of support and they have children with developmental and intellectual disabilities? Mm-hmm. You know, so this has become a piece, an integral piece of the fabric of that church plant.
Yeah.
And so it was really a beautiful thing to see the heart, the merciful hearts that these women have, and to be able to walk with them, to learn so much from them. These ladies in many ways taught me how to be a deaconess in terms of being feet on the ground and learning from them day in, day out. But to be able to give them the gift of the theological teaching that I had been given at Concordia, mm-hmm. so that they can understand this gospel motivation that we have, that was a really beautiful gift that I was given.
Yeah. Did you see a lot of changes in the women, their hearts for service grow a lot as you were teaching them?
Absolutely. I mean, the number of students in my time, because it was pretty limited, the number of students didn't necessarily grow, but mm-hmm. I was very privileged to walk with them in a number of just life circumstances mm-hmm. that demonstrated to me their faith, their patience sometimes in situations that I myself would very much struggle, mm-hmm. and their desire to reach out and visit those who are often ostracized and left out mm-hmm. in the society. That was humbling to me, which is why I felt so privileged to get to teach them, because it was, in many ways, I mean, it was reciprocal.
Sure, sure. Did it, the teaching them in turn gave you a deeper understanding of what it really means to be a deaconess?
Absolutely. It absolutely did. Not only in preparing for my classes, but then sometimes even when our class would kind of derail a little bit, it actually, sometimes that is when we had the most insightful conversations.
Sure.
and the most practical application of the concepts we were studying.
Sure, sure. How receptive are the people in the Dominican Republic to the gospel? Because it is a majority Catholic country, so being able to teach them the gospel, but from a different perspective, maybe?
Right. Dominicans are they're a very open people, mm-hmm. which lends itself to being a huge open door to share the gospel. But it also means that a lot of people are very vulnerable mm-hmm. to other messages.
Sure.
And so something that all of us missionaries, myself included, we're always trying to teach and emphasize is that, you know, number one, what is the true gospel at its core, mm-hmm. at its most simplified? Because only then can any of us recognize when we hear false messages.
Sure.
And so, for example, if we were doing a home visit, and this would happen all the time, that someone would have their Bible on their coffee table, perhaps, along with a Jehovah's Witnesses pamphlet.
Oh, wow.
And maybe the Mormon missionaries are also kind of doing the circuit in the community and visiting. And then they ask you, as a Lutheran missionary, to pray for them. And it just has emphasized to me that the openness is a wonderful, wonderful thing, but how important it is for us to be teaching our new church members that not everyone who wants to share with you is going to tell you truth, because they themselves mm-hmm. have been deceived by falsehood.
Right.
So the open door is amazing. Mm-hmm. People talk about God all the time. And there's certainly, like you mentioned, it is a predominantly Roman Catholic country, but often in name. There are certainly, I am certain, that there are very devout Roman Catholic Christians in that country. However, the theology of the Roman Catholic Church in the Dominican Republic, as in many Latin countries, has been synchronized a lot with things like Santeria, which is of the occult, and other varieties of spirit worship and ancestor working with the ancestors, trying to work your own salvation type of concepts. Sure. And then you throw in the charismatic Pentecostal movements that have swept across the country and confused a lot of people, putting their focus on themselves instead of on Christ.
Sure.
And so the opportunities are really endless in terms of the conversations that are pretty easy to find yourself in. I mean, I've talked to taxi drivers and shop owners, and in addition to church members and people who actually seek out a Christian to talk to. So
sure.
I found myself, I guess, in situations that I never really expected.
Yeah.
In that regard.
Yeah.
But the point is, the open door is there, but teaching people, how do we distinguish what's coming through it?
Yeah, that's very, very important. So now you're back in the States. Thinking back on the last 5 years of your service, do you have a moment or a specific thing that you really loved to be able to do, or an experience or something?
Let's see. Well, there were a lot. Everything from the amazing people that I grew to love to the openness of the culture, the music. The weather wasn't too bad either, I'll be honest. But overall, I think the first thing in my mind is connected to your previous question about people's openness to the gospel. Mm-hmm. The fact that people will engage you, even if they don't know you, in conversation about God, or ask you why you're there, or ask what is a Lutheran, or what's the focus of the Lutheran Church, and getting to share with them that it's all about Jesus, mm-hmm. that is the most... That's my favorite thing, and that could be the case anywhere, I know. But in particular, that culture lends itself to open, fairly easy conversation in many cases, mm-hmm. To get to share that with people. And a lot of people know the terminology of the Christian faith,
sure.
but what it all means and how it connects to Jesus. So many people have lived their entire lives knowing things by rote memorization, but
right.
never knowing, what does this have to do with my eternal salvation, the certainty of that in Christ? And what does this have to do with my life today and my family?
Sure.
Those connections have not been fleshed out for the majority of people that I met.
Sure. We have just about a minute left. What are you hopeful for going forward? I know you're still very in the beginning parts of transitioning back to life in the States. What are you hopeful for? What do you hope to be able to do or serve here with your new husband? Those kinds of things.
Well, in terms of the field, I certainly look forward to seeing how the Lord continues working there, as he has long before I ever set foot there. But in terms of moving forward, I'm excited to see what opportunities God puts before my husband Phil and I to serve, maybe in situations that we don't expect to find ourselves.
Sure.
Or maybe exactly as we expect to find ourselves. It's all pretty open at this point. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see what God sets in front of us in order to put to hopefully good use the things that both of us have learned as missionaries.
Sure.
And see where that takes us.
Sure. With me in studio today is Deaconess Rachel Jaseph, and you can learn more about Rachel's work and missionary work in Peru and the Dominican Republic at lcms.org/Jaseph. That's J-A-S-E-P-H. You can also learn about how you can serve as a missionary at lcms.org/service. Or if you're interested in Concordia's Deaconess program, check out their website at cuchicago.edu/deaconess. Rachel, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thanks for having me.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program.
Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.